Your name, please?
Malcolm Boyd.
And your occupation and position?
I'm a priest, a writer, and a fellow at Yale University.
Father Boyd, in your book, Are You Running With Me, Jesus?, you help people to pray. How can we help people to experience God?
Well, my viewpoint is that we help people to experience God when we listen to people, when we really love people. And I'm not using love in a kind of cheap way here at all. I realize the word, a lot of the meaning has been lost, but I'm coming back and using it deliberately. I think when we love people, and that means accepting their love too, I think this is all part of their experiencing God, when they can experience us in a kind of honest, total, loving, real way.
This is Viewpoint, a series of unrehearsed and personal interviews with people from all walks of life, produced by the Episcopal Church and brought to you as a news and public affairs program of this station. Today's guest is the Reverend Malcolm Boyd, fellow at Yale University, Episcopal chaplain at large, and noted author, whose books include Are You Running With Me, Jesus? And The Fantasy World of Peter Stone. Here is the moderator of the award-winning series Viewpoint, the Reverend Dana F. Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy.
Welcome to Viewpoint, Father Malcolm Boyd. What sort of evidences do you see that makes you feel that students and others are interested in religion, in God?
For one thing, the fact that there's a sense that people have to make it with other people and with God, a kind of emptiness. You can build the walls and put everything nice into them, but then most people I know aren't content to kind of drag themselves into these four walls and shut the door and shut God and people and life out. They can't stand it. So then they open the door and they come out again, even into chaos, as they might see it, from the sort of ordered, neat thing they thought they were building in terms of their life or their building or whatever. In other words, I feel that a common acknowledgement of emptiness if one is alone or just doing it on one's own terms is part of this evidence. And then I think the commitment I find, and I do, I think the commitment of so many students and so many young people now to the fact that there just can't be war anymore, period, that we just cannot annihilate the human race. And they're willing to pay a very high price, if necessary, for this. And this is deeply religious, you see. The motivation for this obviously isn't superficial at all. It's deeply Jewish and deeply Christian and deeply religious and deeply scriptural, deeply ethical. There's no question of this. And then the question, too, in the middle of racial, you'd almost have to say chaos now, the deep, deep pain and estrangement. And yet the fact that so many people are committed now to you might say, making it as human beings, to getting through whatever barriers there are, not superficially again, but in a very real sense. I mean, I find this everywhere now, this evidence.
How does the established church help people nowadays, or does it?
Well, I think the established church, and what is the established church? I think we are as much princes of the church as anybody, probably, aren't we? Aren't we the establishment too, you know? I don't know what it is anymore. It certainly isn't some little Wizard of Oz sitting in some building in New York, I know that. You know, I mean, but I've felt that the established church did hurt people in a number of ways, and it helped them in a number of ways. I have felt that people were hurt sexually, sometimes by their understanding of the church, maybe, if they were all hung up and uptight and everything. And I have felt that politically, maybe they were hurt, if they felt that Christianity had to do with the soul, but not the body and the mind, not the whole man and not the whole society. But again, the very church that is somewhat responsible for these things, and it is also responsible for the other side of the coin, for the Judeo-Christian tradition that screams and shouts at us about prophetic religion and about sacramental religion and about what is the essence of Christianity. So, I mean, the very church that is contributing to hang-ups is also contributing to health, I think. I guess it's all there, isn't it?
And is there any kind of commitment, allegiance, fellowship with Jesus that enters into this?
Well, I think just as much as it does anywhere in the establishment church, I think a fellowship with Jesus enters in there. I think here too. You see, this isn't a new church or anything. It's a movement. We've had them through history. Every age, every generation has had it, hasn't it? When it's been healthy. When the church has been healthy, you've always had surgery and renewal and battle and deep concern and not indifference. And when the church has been unhealthy, you've had people passively sitting around doing nothing, right? So we're in a very healthy creative period, obviously, of ferment. But one isn't dealing with anything really unlike the establishment church. It's just a group of people who feel stifled and who feel that they must express themselves. But I mean, let's see, John the 23rd, Bernard of Clairvaux, Catherine of Siena, John Wesley, Martin Luther, name it, I guess, right? Isn't it history? Isn't it the earliest church? It seems to me this has always been a part of the church. I don't know why we let sort of the mass media label us and say it's new when it isn't new.
Does the underground church lose contact completely with the established church? Do they sort of write it off as a lost cause?
No, I don't think so at all. In fact, no, not at all. The establishment church, and again, it's so hard to know even what we mean. The establishment church now, I don't think one has to be so angry. You know?
And does the established or the organized church, whatever we want to call it, does that listen to the underground church?
Yes. It's so funny. Lately, clergy have been coming to see me so rapidly, I almost have to try to, you know, I want to see students, and I'm and the clergy are pouring in. And what I'm saying is, the interplay between persons is very interesting right now. In other words, the so-called image of the establishment church isn't there. You have a lot of people suffering, laughing, trying to do something. There's no question of that. It's a bit like the Armada at times, and you wish that it could have a little more, considerably more spontaneity and movement. And there's some aspects of it I don't think can make it without fundamental change. And I don't see why we're afraid of fundamental change.
But is the thing which people in the underground church are looking for any different from what they say the parish priest of a parish church somewhere would be looking for in his ministry?
If each is honest, and there are some underground people who aren't, and there are some people in the establishment or the parish church or whatever the term is who aren't, but if anyone is honest in either the parish church or any part of the establishment church or the underground church, they're looking for the same thing. They're looking for a kind of gut actual meaning where they're not kidding themselves or anybody else. They're trying not to play games with God. That went out some time ago. The old games don't work anyway. You have to have, I mean, that's over, I think.
What about the separateness of death?
Oh, I thought of it the other day quite a bit because something had happened to me and I actually thought that I might be very close to death. And it's funny, it concerned I mean, definitely a loving of life here. There's no question of that. A wanting to do certain things, which were funny. Certainly to be with certain people. To go for a walk on a certain kind of day. To plant some vegetable and flower seeds in a garden. These are things that have more meaning to me anyway now. I'm very, very concerned about the sanctity, the beauty, the importance of life. I simply will not permit its vulgarization or its it's just being dehumanized and blown away. I mean, I feel very strongly about this, about a certain slowing down. I won't read a whole lot of magazines and look at a lot of television. I'm going to pace life the way I want to pace life. I'm not going to become a cog and be swept along. And I feel very strongly about this. You know, you see, you can pace yourself. You have to, or you will be destroyed. And of course, with the media, selective, be selective. Choose, listen to what you want to listen to. Look at what you want to look at and turn it off. I mean, this is very important, I think.
And what are you doing at Yale now?
Oh, it's totally unstructured, which is great. They call it a fellow. I live there, and I eat three meals a day in a cafeteria line. I have a cot. I don't have a car. I don't have a television. I'm with students, not over a desk. They can, like the other night, some student looked me up at 1, a student called me at 2:30. That's fine. This was important. This was something. This was somebody in crisis in the community I'm living in. And he just said, "Come over to my room."
This,
you see. I mean, I like this. It doesn't spread you so thin, and it's a time for relationships that mean a great deal to me.
I think many of us are quite confused who are not too close to the campus now with all of the unrest, the revolts, and all that is going on. Do you have any feeling as to what's actually going on, what's causing this?
I do have a feeling. I think students are questioning institutions. Thank God they're doing it. They're saying to the church, "You say you're the body of Christ. Okay, act like it. Let me see Jesus in you. Let me see the way of Jesus in you instead of privilege." Fine. They're saying about marriage or to marriage. What is it? Can this be real for us? Is this just a bind? Is this just some sort of a conformity? Is this going to kill our relationship? Or is it something that can free us and deepen our relationship? Fine, I think it's a very legitimate question. They're saying, of course, to politics. You know, are you just cornball and hypocrisy? Is there any truth at all in you? If so, where? Fine. They're saying to the university, "You say you are the community of scholars. We don't find community or scholars. Instead, we find that we're a number. We're a digit. We're getting trained but not educated. We're leaving here not intellectuals. We'd like to understand something about what it means to be intellectual, which really means to inquire, to question. We want to be human. We want to stand up and scream so you'll look at us and say, 'Hello, Henry, you're not 0022339. I find this extremely valid and authentic.
Traditionally, we've said it's God's world. Is this true?
That's interesting to put it that way now. We said it was God's world, meaning God on a canopy above it, sort of like Queen Victoria. And now with God all mixed up in the world, isn't it more God's world? I would think so.
What are the goals, Father Boyd, that keep you functioning in the way you do?
I have a rather simple Orthodox faith. I've acted in unorthodox ways about it because I feel that unless you do, I would question one's orthodoxy if one isn't acting in unorthodox ways at this point. It's amused me that so many people have not understood the sort of simple Orthodox faith that I have. That has always amused me, because instead they have looked at form. It seems so odd that they have not looked at content. Also, in relationship to the church, I have a Virginia Woolf marriage with it, a passionate, hungry, desperate marriage with the church, this incredible, intense love. But it's not passive and never will be.
Thank you very much, Father Malcolm Boyd, for being with us and for giving us your viewpoint.
This has been Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview produced by the Division of Radio and Television of the Episcopal Church and presented in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and the Council of Churches of the City of New York as a news and public affairs program of this station. Today's guest was the Reverend Malcolm Boyd, fellow at Yale University, Episcopal Chaplain at Large, and noted author whose books include Are You Running With Me, Jesus? And The Fantasy World of Peter Stone.